Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Retro Raw Rundown. Oh, for fuck's sake, it's not the Retro, it's the Raw Rundown. It's not retro anymore, it's Raw. Anyway, I'm Kenny McIntosh, joined as always when we talk about current day Monday Night Raw by David G. McCutcheon. Now, David, I happy anniversary, because you and I have been podcasting together for over a year now, because, can you allow me the floor for a minute?
Kenny, sugar pie, honey bunch, you do you.
I'd rather be dead than work at What Culture again. They are the biggest shout of cunts I've ever worked for. I wish them the worst of feelings. Atrocious company, atrocious bosses, scumbags of all degrees. No, actually, one of the bosses is good. The other one I would set on fire if I had the chance. And people say, oh, would you ever go back? I'd rather work in McDonald's for the rest of my life at the checkout and never progress than go back there. Because I value myself. But one of the positives that did come out of it, one of the positive relationships was we got David to start podcasting. And we did the Raw reaction over there. They promised David money, never paid him, because that's the kind of company they are. And, you know, have still not paid him to this day. Didn't understand why that was a problem. So, you know, feel free to use that when you want to click their links and make them money on YouTube. But we have podcasted together for over a year now, so happy anniversary, honey bunch.
It's been a couple of years, not just one, but yes.
It's almost 2 years. So almost two years. Sorry,
2 year anniversary. My goodness, Kenny, the time flies whenever you're having fun. You
well, know? It started flying when we got to Shawshank, but
you know, it was so funny. Can you imagine, like, the type of podcast that we do now? Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you did not hear. By the way, I was channeling my inner Paul Heyman. Go get your Paul Heyman tickets for New Orleans.
Say the ropes.co.uk / Paul Heyman.
Yeah. Definitely get those before they sell out. You do not want to miss Paul Heyman in New Orleans for WrestleMania week. But yeah, ladies and gentlemen, please imagine, if you will, knowing the formula that we have here at the Raw Rundown. Try to go back in time and imagine us trying to do a censored podcast. My God. There were so many times, and I would just be sitting there and I would be bleeping and blooping, and Kenny'd be like, stop fucking swearing. And I'd be like, oh, shut up, you cunt. And just immediately off the rails. They wanted to cancel the show right then and there because we kept swearing so much.
And I hate editing, so.
Well, I think I speak for all of us, Kenny, whenever I say, thank fucking Christ that we don't have to worry about no censorship.
Well, you know, I mean, imagine working for a company. Ladies and gentlemen of the world, imagine that you sign a contract for a company where you agree to work a certain amount of hours a week, right? And you go, okay, that's what I'm working. But also, above that, I will do reasonable work at live shows because we want to be Vince McMahon. And... and now you're defiant, so good luck with that. But which I hate, because I actually like the roster, but just hate the management. But like, I was doing my job and it was all good, and then they were like, oh hey, do you want to do this documentary? Well, no, I brought the documentary to them with a very, very famous tennis racketed manager, because I used my personal relationship to try and help the company, and they responded by getting me to do a full 2-day documentary shoot, which we worked 15 hours a day, then travel to Orlando and do a live show where I had to be the ring announcer with no previous experience, even though the amp never worked, and I got paid zero for those hours. Zero for any of that work. Fuck them.
Yeah, it was a pure shit show. And speaking of that tennis racketed manager that you were speaking of, one of my favorite things was him cutting the promo on the company there afterwards. That was something that I will cherish forever, Kenny. I will not reiterate the words that he said, but needless to say, that tennis racketed manager was not very pleased with how the company handled anything.
Of course,
much like us.
It's a shit show. But the thing is, my biggest thing in life, whether it's wrestling or friendship or whatever, is just stand up for yourself. I was going to say be a man, but you know, if you're a woman as well, but just stand up for yourself. Have a set of figurative balls. The owner of that company would hide from wrestlers. He did not want to communicate with anybody. He would actively hide. And that tells you everything you need to know.
I'll never forget, after we'd made introductions, my wife, Valerie, who all of you know by now, she came to the realization, like the light bulb went off in her head, and she pointed over to him and she goes, "Is that the no good motherfucker that isn't paying you your money? I'm married to you. That's my goddamn money too." And I was like, honey, calm down. We're not going to cause a scene here. My wife was literally about to go over there and beat the living fuck out of this guy. And it was the best. Now you know why I married her.
I'll give another example. This company, figurative company, not a literal one, obviously. So, can't use that in court. But imagine that you have somebody on your roster who is such a great guy that he decides, you don't need to book me like any fancy plane seats. You can just put me in economy, even though I'm 6'8". And that's the only proviso. And I'm the go-to guy and I make the deal. And then his only thing was, get me an emergency exit seat because I'm too big for the rest. And they book him a regular one with no emergency exit.
Oh.
And that big Scotsman who was on his way to Stanford, well, actually to Full Sail, work it out, was so nice that he was not going to call it out. And that's the kind of place they are. Is they will not honour deals. They will fuck up relationships with anybody. Don't know why I feel the need to... We're talking about anniversaries, so it got me angry. fuck that place. And
I will say this, though, Kenny, to lift it up a bit and put it on a more positive note. They did allow us to flex our muscles and realize that, wow, we actually have some legs here. So whenever they, canceled our program and told us that it wasn't good enough, we took it over here.
Well, actually, let's say what really happened. What actually happened was not that it got canceled. It was that David was refusing to continue to do it for no money. Well, as he should have. That's what happened. Because when you get to like 10 weeks and they're still not paying you a penny, and this is a company who have enough money to hire offices, big offices, and start a fucking wrestling promotion.
Yeah, yeah.
But God forbid you pay
some... All I wanted was a microphone, which was agreed to and then revoked.
I mean, it's hard because, like, there are a lot of things. Like, a lot of people listening to this right now wouldn't be listening if it wasn't for that place. So I guess, you do have to, give that to...
Yeah, there was a wicked garden, Kenny, and in that wicked garden, a flower blossomed, and we transplanted it into a lovely budding garden in a greenhouse with much sunlight and delightful fanfare. And all has blossomed and matured as a wonderful cornucopia of hilarity and love and prosperity.
And I will say, one of the people in management there, to very recently, I'm not going to go into it, but said to me that, he feels horrible for the way things ended. And what I wanted to say was, well, if you just, set your partner on fire, everything will be fine. But he is not yet
figurative fire, ladies and gentlemen, not figurative, literal.
Figurative fire, figurative boss, figurative situation, hypothetical yes. even.
Yes, yes, exactly.
And scene. That was a piece that David and I are working on about disgruntled employees in the workplace.
Yes.
You enjoyed it. And, We'll try and do some more sometime. Anyway, lots to talk about this week, but I want to get straight into it. I want to just, get right into some news, if you don't mind, David.
Go for it. Let's hear all this news.
So, WWE, apparently after WrestleMania 34, according to PW Insider, who, of course, are legitimate sources, say that WWE are going to be introducing the Cruiserweight Tag Team titles to 205 Live. And I had asked people on Twitter earlier today, because I was quite curious, because I have an opinion on it, but I was curious to see what everybody else thought. So let me just give you what the the people have said, and we can go from there. So with how many votes have we got here? With 1,607 votes, we have 52% saying good, more stakes for cruiserweights, 29% no, we don't need more titles, and 19% don't care either way. Where do you sit, David, and why?
I was one of the 29% who voted in this and said that, no, we don't need more titles. But that's just me. I often get really sick of cruiserweights being relegated to these tag matches and six-man tags and eight-man tags and 12-man tags and 18-man tags and 24-man tags. I'm so tired of all these tag team matches that get sorted as a way to fit more people on a card that I feel it would just relegate a bunch of guys, and it would essentially be just what they're doing now, only belts would be at stake. And I feel like that would be stupid. So that was my thoughts on it.
So for me, like I'm one of the 29% as well. I don't
like-minded here.
I don't want to see it. Like I know a lot of people would actually respond to it saying, you know, they want some women's tag titles, which no. Like there's like eight women.
So, yeah, like, yeah, then you'd have like
half of the roster fighting over a tag title, and then three can, like, I get the scope, but it's like, I remember, and I think you were probably just about still watching at this point, maybe. Like, during the invasion, I got a headache from how many titles there were.
Like, oh, it's way too many.
The WCW title, the WWF title, the Intercontinental Championship, the US title, the tag titles, the WCW tag titles, and there was all these titles. And I just don't think they mean more. The other thing that Sondra and I talked about was, it was reported that last week on 205 Live, I think it was last week, they had Roderick Strong versus Kalisto, and it was a really good match, and Roderick Strong went through, but I think it was like a third of the audience in the building had left. And
yeah,
like my take on it, and maybe that's just, you know, you're more of a kind of, you know, you watch different kinds of wrestling, New Japan, Ring of Honor, etc., whereas I'm more of just a WWE fan. And I think the problem with 205 Live is WWE fans, for the most part, I think, want stars. They don't just, you can't just get good wrestling out of them and expect them to, you know, get go in droves. Case in point, yeah, like Cedric Alexander, great wrestler, but maybe the most uncharismatic man on earth. I don't know. He's definitely top five. I mean, when he tries to emote, he makes Sable look dramatic.
Oh man, Kenny, I have a question for you. I know you plan on getting completely liquored up in New Orleans. Uh-huh. Are you going to bring your Sable outfit with the hands over the breasts?
Am I gonna do the Sable Fully Loaded 98 entrance?
Yeah, I know you have it in your closet, but are you planning on busting it out and bringing it overseas, abroad, if you will?
I mean, I could be tempted, is what I'm saying. I could be tempted.
It basically hinges on how drunk we get you.
I mean, I'm going to be drunk pretty much most of the time, to be fair. And then it's funny because I want to go to a non-WWE show at some point.
Sure.
So I think the one that's kind of winning my heart so far is Joey Janela's Spring Break on the Friday night at like midnight.
Sure.
Because they've got like Quebecer Pierre and stuff, and like it's supposed to be like a mix of indie guys and old WWF people. So like, cool.
That's essentially right up your alley.
Yeah, I mean, I do wish that I could go to ROH, but, you know, like I say, but I'm telling you, fucking Ciampa and Gargano, if it doesn't happen, I'll be so angry. That's the one thing that could sway me.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're going to be furious if that doesn't come to pass. Is Ciampa even, by the way, I infuriated some people in the community, intentionally, Kenny. I was being a bit of one of those internet trolls that you hear so much about. Poor Karan fell hook, line, and sinker into it. Somebody was talking about how much they hate Tommaso Ciampa, you know, because he's so dastardly. And I made the argument, Kenny, that Tommaso Ciampa is actually the babyface in that feud, you know? Because he did something admirable, Kenny. Sometimes you got to cut negative people out of your life, you know? And sometimes it hurts. It's a bitter pill to swallow, but sometimes you just got to take that pill and get better yourself. You got to worry about you. And that's what Tommaso Ciampa did. He cut a loser out of his life, Kenny. He said, you know, this guy's holding me back and I just got to let him go. And it's not going to be easy, but I got to do what's right for me. And I think that's an admirable trait, Kenny. What do you think?
I think that Tommaso Ciampa is brilliant. Like, my favorite thing is that I think Edge liked one of his tweets, and he was like, I'm not coming on your podcast to give you hits. And I was like, oh, you beautiful man. Also, what I love about Tommaso Ciampa is, so, I'm not here to toot my own horn at all, but, like, I look better now than I did 10 years ago.
Sure.
I think you're the same, actually, from pictures I've seen. You've matured with age in a good way.
Thank you. I've looked like a child molester since I was 16.
You look a little bit less child molester. I look
like one of those distinguished child molesters now.
I was going to say you graduated to molesting adults, but you know, whatever way we want to put it. But like, you know that famous photo of Tommaso Ciampa from 2006 on SmackDown that he posted a lot. Which is horrendous. I wish someone could have gone up to that guy and go, see, in 10 years, you're going to look great bald, you're going to have a killer beard, you're going to have abs, a hot wife, and you're going to be talk of the industry. And he would have been like, I'll take it. Because, like, I have a couple of friends where, like, and you, I mean, you are aware of this, but there's people who, they know that the hairline is going. And it's like, when is the acceptance point? When do you go, okay, I'm going to shave the head? And I don't know when Ciampa did do it, but he definitely looks better with age. But some people, you know, they're like, oh my God, you know, it's 10 years later and I don't look as good. Whereas I'm like, I look kind of better because I'm eating less pies. So, and you almost died, which helped.
Right, of course. Now, see, I would shave my head, Kenny, but have you ever seen the shape of my skull?
Oh, have you got an egghead?
This is like a soft-boiled egghead that had something pressing into it for the longest time. It's basically one of those egg chairs. You know what I'm talking about? Like the 1960s retro feel to it, to where it sort of looks like someone could sit on my forehead, basically. And there's a little enclave there. A nice, some nice comforting padding right there, because, you know, my brain's nothing but mush. Got a mush head, Kenny. I guess that's what it would be called, a mush head.
You do. the Ciampa Gargano thing is kind of keeping me going with ROH, but I do want to go and see a non-wrestling show, sorry, a non-WWE show during WrestleMania weekend. But do you know what I was doing before we podcasted? No, I do that afterwards.
Okay. I thought you were going to say during, but all right.
I feel like I'm legitimately going to shock you. Are you ready?
Fine.
I'm annoyed that I couldn't get more through it because I had stuff to do. But I'm already halfway through Okada and Ospreay from the 46th anniversary New Japan show.
Holy shit! Wow, you're on the ball here. That's nuts. I have not watched it yet, but I'm pretty sure I know who wins.
I stupidly gave myself like 20 minutes, and you know I'm like I'm maybe not even halfway through yet, but Liam Stewart on Facebook had said that, which is ironic that he used to be like, New Japan shite, and then he left the group, now he's back and he loves it. But you know, anyway.
Big shout, Big Ian.
Only love LS. But he was saying that, you know, for people who don't like flippy Ospreay to give it a I love Will Ospreay, I've worked with him before, he's a great guy. And you know, his style with like the stuff he does with Ricochet is not my thing. Doesn't mean it's not good, it's just not for me. But he had a match with Drew in Hell, and that was good. Because he just worked a different kind of match. But so far, the match with Okada and Ospreay is great. And there's this bit at the beginning where, like, you know, they're doing like the test of strength thing with the hands, and then like Okada flips it round, and they're both doing pinfall attempts and bridges, and it's really good. And it's funny because at the beginning of the match, there's a Osprey, chant, and you can tell he's just like cannot stop laughing because he's like in Japan. But I love
whenever the Japanese crowd emulates American or European crowds. It always cracks me up.
Yeah, no, but I just wanted to say, because I know sometimes I don't watch enough stuff, but and then Nicholas on Twitter had sent me, did he DM it to me? I hope he did. Yes, he DM'd, he said I need to watch the Ibushi and Omega against, what is the match? Hang on.
It's the Golden Lovers. Who did the Golden Lovers face for this? I'm trying to remember.
It was a tag match that he told me to watch. It was the big tag match involving the Bullet Club recently.
Oh, recently, huh?
That had there's gonna be like New Japan fans just being like, "What are you doing?" Let me try and see if I can find it here. New Japan was on the New Beginning or Honor Rising, one of the two.
The New Beginning. No, I'm thinking a New Year's Dash. Kenny, it's too late on a Tuesday for me.
okay, but anyway, the point is I'm trying, people. Give me some credit. So, was it a Ring of Honor? It was Ibushi and Omega against Skrull and Cody. That was the match.
Okay.
That I need to watch from Honor Rising Night 2. So,
okay.
I do intend to watch it, just in case people are getting on at me. But, so I was also going to ask you about the deal that WWE might be doing with Fox next year, because obviously the contract's up with USA. And the big story is that if Fox get WWE, they would probably put Raw down to 2 hours again.
Of course.
Which would be, I mean, orgasmic is not even the word. But, I mean that as a compliment, because the show, like Raw recently, we've had quite a good run of the show, but I mean if it was 2 hours it'd be so tight, and like it'd be good. But what do you're an American, so you probably know more than me, would the deal going to Fox change anything? I know somebody had asked us on Twitter about would it make the Attitude Era come back or something, but tell me a little bit about Fox, what it would mean, if any change to the product, I guess.
The Fox thing sets a very trepidatious precedent, Kenny. It could end up spelling a sale for WWE. I mean, you know, if you want to look into it that much. Fox is a huge network, Kenny. Like, it's sort of insane to think about. The other thing, too, is Fox was recently purchased by Disney. So I know there were a lot of rumors between about WWE getting bought out by Disney and selling the company. So this could be a step in the right direction for that sale, or wrong direction, depending on which side of the aisle you take. This is going to be very strange. It won't mean anything to the product, though. A lot of people are hung up on networks. And they think that the USA network is the reason that the Attitude Era isn't around anymore. A, times change. B, the Attitude Era was on the USA network, you guys. Come on, use your head. It's not the network, it's the sponsors. You want to know what's keeping the WWE from throwing women out there with their nipples showing every 5 seconds? Two things. Human decency. That's number one. Times have changed, you guys, for the better. Number two, if you go into Walmart or Toys R Us or Target or whatever your big box retailer in the UK might be, the equivalent of that, and you walk down the toy aisle, you'll notice there's a bunch of Mattel action figures for the WWE. Could you imagine, Kenny, if Mattel made the limited edition Sable with her tits hanging out with the handprints over her nipples? Could you imagine that limited edition toy in the toy aisle? Because I can't. So I mean, that's the thing.
I would totally buy that figure, by the way.
That's the thing that's keeping the WWE quote-unquote PG. But my rant for that is like, what was so much better about the Attitude Era versus PG just by standards alone, right? Like, so the wrestling nowadays is better. The wrestlers are more talented. The storylines were better back in the day, but it wasn't because you had bra and panties matches or Mae Young giving birth to a hand or Al Snow eating his dog, which was ground up in chili. It wasn't any of those things that made the storytelling better, you guys. It was chaos, and there's no better personification of that right now than Braun Strowman. Braun Strowman is giving us the best of the Attitude Era without all the sexist, racist bullshit that came along with it. So you trim the fat a little bit here, guys. Enjoy what you got, because right now we're enjoying and reaping the benefits of the chaos that Braun Strowman brings without all of the blatant sexism that came along with that shit.
Do you know what? It's funny because Sondra and I are watching Retro Raw a lot, and Sondra is really into the Sable angle. And do you know why? Because it's good. And people, oh, you know, the Attitude Era was terrible. There was terrible parts to it. There was.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But there was really good parts of it. You know, Sable is, you know, being berated by Mark Merrow, and she's on her way to getting her comeuppance on Luna and stuff, and it's like, it's good. And I think the biggest thing, and you will rarely hear me compliment this person, but Vince Russo deserves credit, because he was the head writer, and he would go to Vince and Bruce Pritchard and people like that, and they would filter Russo's good ideas and, you know, not use the bad ones. And I think the biggest thing that's a problem now is that, and this is from listening to, even like, there was a guy on the PW Torch podcast, on Podcast One, Christian Harloff, I think his name was, and he worked for the WWF for 2 months in 2001. And he was saying that they used to have, I think because they had a very small team, they were able to do all these plans. But when you have like 20 people, and it goes through various links, it's not going to be as tight as it was. So it's just one of those things. It's the way they do it now. Will they ever go back to the way they used to do it? I think when Triple H is in charge, they will change it.
Let's note, that doesn't mean women giving birth to hands. That means...
No, it means, like, I think Triple H will... I think he will make the product better. But I do also think that there's... I think people don't realise that when Vince is gone, there is elements that Vince has that we will miss. And I don't think you'll see them till he's gone.
Yeah.
Because even though he has some ideas where you're maybe like, oh my God, what is that? Braun Strowman is there because of Vince.
Yeah, that is totally a Vince concept, for sure.
And good. Because without Braun Strowman, fuck.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess, I don't know when we find out whether WWE are going to stay with USA or go with Fox, but it should be later on this year. It was Aldo on Twitter, by the way, that mentioned that. Some more news making the rounds today is, I didn't see coming, to be honest, Alberto El Patron, or Alberto Del Rio, whatever you want to call him, was at WWE headquarters last week filming some footage for a Rey Mysterio project that they're doing, and the chat is that Vince McMahon is interested in bringing him back to the company. So, I'm going to give you my personal experience with him before we talk about it, so that you can frame why I'm probably being nicer about him than people would expect me to be.
Sure.
I'm not going to go into it, but he was at a show that I was working at, there was some issues, and he had fallen out with the person he was with at that point, you all know who it is, and him and I had a conversation, because him and I were going to do a show in Birmingham last year, and I made the decision to cancel the show. It was not his decision, he was going to come, but I felt that given all the stuff he had going on in his life, that he was not in a place where being on a stage for 90 minutes would be a good fit for him. Whereas going out and wrestling for 15 minutes is a different beast, really. It's very different to being on stage and all that kind of stuff for 90 minutes. So I made the call. And trust me, there is not many more terrifying things than going to find him surrounded by other wrestlers and having to tell him that you don't want to go ahead with a show, but you need to just do it. So, and him and I had a conversation, and he said some stuff which I would never repeat publicly, but I saw another side of him, and I think that sometimes people listen to what is out there, and I'm not saying he's an angel or that he is, you know, going to win Humanitarian of the Year, but I don't think everybody knows the full story either way, so I give him a little bit more leeway in that way because of that. But within saying that, thoughts on Vince wanting to bring him back?
I'll be brutally honest and say that as a performer, he does nothing for me. He's one of those guys that everybody goes, oh, he's the type of guy that you don't know what you got with him until it's gone. And then once he's gone, you'll miss him and you'll go, oh man, it was really great whenever Del Rio was there and blah, blah, blah. To me, I never felt that way about him. Now, that isn't to completely shit on the guy. You know, he has value. He's a former champion, former Royal Rumble winner. He's got the accolades and the credentials. So, you know, by the very definition of things, that's a good thing. You know, it's star power to an extent, I think. So, but yeah, for me personally, he never really did much for me. If he's coming back, I don't think it's a detriment, but it's just sort of, he'd just be another body that's there. And given his last run with the company, I don't know how much stock they could really put on with him. And given his recent track record, as of about a year ago, and especially with all the Paige controversies and everything, I don't know, Kenny. I don't know how much they would be willing to push the guy, you know?
When he was working with me in Hell, he was, whenever he would do shows, what was really interesting about him was that whenever he would come out and do a match, and he would cut promos and stuff like that, and like he would always get the crowd on side. Actually, do you want to hear a funny story about Del Rio?
Sure.
So we're backstage in Newcastle, and this is like, I want to say like December or something. Anyway, so he's going to have a match with Kurt Angle and Milton Keynes in the February. So I go and find him and I say, hey, when you finish your match, I'm going to come out and you're going to challenge Kurt. And he was like, well, how do you want to do it? Like, what do you want me to ask you that's going to bring you to making that challenge? And I think that my very strong Scottish accent was not helping because he was kind of like, what? And he was with Paige, and at the time, they were very insular together. They were very polite, they were very nice, but they just kept to themselves. That was how they, you know, acted. And
sure.
So I would go in, you know, they're both looking at me, and there's no more surreal of a feeling than, you know, they're all over the news, all the time, and they're both just staring at me, and I'm like, hey, what are you doing? And so anyway, so then we sort it out. Okay, I'm going to come in the ring and I'm going to ask you, you know, how do you feel about working here, etc., etc. Good, we're all done. So he has his match, he wins, and I come out and I get, now Paige's front row, but she's obviously off camera because she's still with WWE, so you know, contracts, sure, and stuff. So I get in the ring and I go to ask him something, and Newcastle's like the home base for Hell. It's not the home base for Hell. It's the home base for that company that I call Hell. And
sure.
So I get in the ring, and because I'm also on the YouTube channel and doing other stuff, every single person in the building starts chanting, fuck you, Kenny. Fuck you, Kenny. And he is baffled by this. And he's like looking at me going, what? And I just didn't know what to do.
Yeah,
and I just kind of went, it's lovely to see you too in Newcastle. So then it goes somewhere I did not expect it to go. See, he's having fun with it, and he's like,
sure,
he's laughing because he doesn't know what's going on, but he knows that I'm embarrassed, so he's kind of figured out something with me. So he takes the mic, gets out the ring, walks over to Paige, and says, "Baby, what are they saying?" And the mic goes on her, and she looks at me and goes, I think they're saying, fuck you, Kenny. And everybody cheers. So now the WWE contracted performer, who's not supposed to be there, is going to be on camera saying, fuck you to me.
So then he
gets back in the ring, and he's like, challenges Kurt Angle, but luckily, the way that he does the challenge is as if it's going to happen in Newcastle, but it's going to happen in Milton Keynes, so we can't use it. And I went backstage, I walked up to him, I was like, if you fucking use this, I was like, I'll be ruined. I've got a good relationship with WWE, and then I'm going to have one of the performers who's not supposed to be here saying, fuck you to me on a camera. So I'm losing, I'm throwing a strop.
And, yes, of course.
And threatening to walk, you know. Like it would really matter if I walked, but I was using every piece of leverage I had.
Of course.
And luckily it never got used. So that's one of my Alberto
stories. You dodged a bullet, but a hell of a good story, though.
Yes, and then we got to Milton Keynes, which is when Del Rio and I were going to do the show, and then that didn't happen. But I had very good experiences with him, so I can't really say anything bad personally about him. But it's, I think with him, he kind of reminds me a little bit of Randy Orton. In the sense that I kind of go, there is something there. There is. I totally get when people say about, because there is something, but it's just not being utilized well, or he's not found that groove, or whatever. But when he came back in 2015, I want to say it was, I think it was 2015, he came back Hell in a Cell or something against Cena. The issue was that when he came back, everybody went mental. And they loved the guy, and then they put him with Zeb.
Yeah.
And that was just death to him.
Well, it made zero sense, because Zeb Coulter, the good old Dutch Mantel, that character is just a Trump voter. Let's be perfectly honest and call a spade. It's a Trump voter, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what would the Mexican be doing with the Trump voter, who despises Mexicans, based on the very premise that he's a Trump voter? Makes no sense.
Exactly, but I do, you know, he's had some great matches in WWE. I loved his run of matches with Sheamus in 2012. They don't really get talked about too often. They were very good. He had some really fun matches with The Big Show in 2013, when Bret Hart called him the Mexican Bret Hart, one of my favourite lines of all time. but I actually think if he came back, for various reasons that you can probably imagine, I think he should be on SmackDown. But I do think there's something in the idea of him and Andrade Cien Almas with Vega.
Oh, that would be good. I didn't even think about that.
As a little kind of, you know, like, because, you know, Del Rio's got money and he's, you know, this aristocrat. And Almas is a guy who just wants to be number one. And Vega's such a great mouthpiece for Almas. Imagine what he could do, what she could do for Del Rio. I like the idea of I think, you know, SmackDown is an absolute, you know, vacuum of nothing right now. And I don't know, him and Almas, I could see it happening. I could see something there.
Yeah, no, so we'll that would actually that could be a money deal right there. I don't know if it would be pairing them or if it would be a feud between them, but either way, that could be good.
And I Almas is one of the rumored people who will be making his way to the main roster at some point in the near future.
Yeah.
So, and I think he should. Almas is someone who, he's almost like Braun Strowman for me, in that when he was in NXT for the first maybe year, I was just like, I don't see it, I don't get it. You know, he's good in the ring, but it's just not there. And then Vega, just him and her together are just genius.
It's really good.
It's made him a superstar.
He finally feels like he's clicking. Like he feels comfortable, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, fair play to him. You know, he used to be under a mask.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I can only imagine that if you've worked under a mask for so long, and then all of a sudden you are, you know, told, okay, now you're going to work without a mask. You're like, oh, okay. Like, so a new place and not working with a mask. And the last thing, I don't know if you want to say anything on this, but I just want to mention it because some people have tweeted me about it. There are allegations of sexual misconduct to Jonathan Coachman. I think that it's one of those things of it's being investigated and you can't really say anything either way, but, you know, he's said on social media that it's not true, etc., etc., but it's, I mean, apparently it broke during Raw, like halfway through Raw.
Ooh. That's, so, gotta be a bit of a tricky situation there.
But they're gonna have to look into it, and it's such a huge issue right now with the whole Me Too and the Time's Up movement that you have to take it really seriously. And It'll all depend. I think if it doesn't really go anywhere, he'll probably be okay. Whether he has done things or not, I don't know. But if it gets any bigger, then I think he's got a short time frame in the company.
But then, oh, hell, dog.
Oh, don't. Shucky, no.
Ducky.
I'm going to say that Booker T sexually abused me to get back off. Hashtag me too. I'm kidding. For anyone who takes that seriously, it's a joke. Anyway.
We may be seeing the return of Uncle Book soon.
Don't call him that. That's the worst thing to call him. Uncle Book. Is that like an urban sequel to Uncle Buck with John Candy?
Oh, I love a good Uncle Buck reference.
Why can't WWE Studios do that? I'd be all in on that.
Come on, I want Uncle Buck. Come on. Oh man, Uncle Buck, but with Booker T. Oh God, could you imagine, Kenny? You know those nerds that line up outside of movie theaters for weeks to get their Star Wars tickets?
That'd be you for Uncle Buck.
That would be me for Uncle Buck.
anyone who enjoys that kind of slightly offbeat joke, please just tweet us with hashtag Uncle Book.
So good.
So, the thing is, I hate myself. I absolutely hate myself. I do kind of miss him, and I hate myself for it.
Yeah, it's like Stockholm Syndrome, right? Like,
he is the definition of it. He's the definition of Stockholm Syndrome.
There's no doubt. I feel the same way about him. I'm like, something feels missing from my life.
Sweet Jesus. So let's talk about Raw. Episode number 85 here of our podcast coverage of Raw. But Milwaukee, Wisconsin is the place. I thought they were a pretty good crowd, to be fair. I thought they did a decent job.
They really petered out towards the main, but yeah, early on they were pretty lively, sure.
So the show opens with Kurt Angle coming out, making his way to the ring. He says that he swallowed his pride a number of times when he returned as GM, but last week went too far when Triple H sucker punched him. He calls out Triple H, told him to face him like a man. He takes his jacket off and he looks ripped.
Yeah, great. For sure.
So Stephanie's music plays. She comes out. She says, Hunter's not arrived yet. And then she mentions Kurt Angle's children. She's like, how many kids have you got? 4. And he's like, 5. Now everybody on Twitter is like, Jason Jordan, 6. Which made me laugh so much. But anyway. He doesn't need to raise him, though. He's on his roster. It's fine. So she mentioned that, his children. And says, alimony's got to be pretty steep because you're remarried. She's such a dick. But yeah. Anyway, so alimony payments must be steep, brought up as achievements, but, does Olympic gold medals pay the bills? And she said, but general manager does. So she told him to know his role and make the matches, and they can put it all behind them. Ronda Rousey's music plays, she comes out, huge reaction from the crowd. She slaps hands of all the people around ringside, loud Ronda Rousey chant. Rousey told Stephanie that what they did to Kurt was enlightening. She's figured out that the people that employ her are not who she thought they were. But she's that's okay. She's put up with that a lot in her career and she'll just deal with it her way. And Stephanie's like, no, Ronda, employees sometimes don't understand that they're bosses. And, we've signed you to a contract. And then Rousey says, well, my deal gives me the right to face whoever I want at WrestleMania, right? And she's like, yeah, of course. Can we have a drum roll? And, Stephanie's just being... Stephanie was sensational in this segment. She really was.
Yeah.
Fair play.
Yeah, for sure.
So she does this like drum roll, but she says, as long as it's not a champion, you face whoever you want. And as she starts a drum roll, Ronda just shouts, you. Stephanie is just aghast at this. And then Triple H's music hits, he comes out, and Angle's like, I thought you weren't here tonight. And he's like, I was here. And he says, this isn't going to happen. And then Kurt Angle cut them off and said, Stephanie, you actually have 2 contracts. You're not only at a executive, but you're also a WWE superstar. She did face Brie Bella at SummerSlam, so she must have a contract.
Yeah, very true.
So she says, so Stephanie, you'll be facing Ronda at WrestleMania. People go nuts. And then Angle says, but you're not the only person with a second contract. Triple H, you're not just the COO. you're also a wrestler, and I told you at Survivor Series, if you ever go ask me again, you're going to pay for it. And Ronda, if it's okay with you, it'll be Triple H and Stephanie against Ronda and me. People go nuts. Hunter tries to calm things down, but then he tries sucker punching Kurt. Kurt blocks it. He tries to put the ankle lock on. They have a brawl. Stephanie enters and hits Ronda from behind, and she kind of briefly gets knocked down and then has death glare in her eyes. She turns to Stephanie. Stephanie runs away. Triple H kicks Kurt Angle, tries to give him the pedigree. Kurt gets the ankle lock in. And then Ronda, as Stephanie's helping Triple H on the outside, grabs Stephanie by the hair, pulls it in. Samoan drops her, and then Angle and Rousey pose to end the segment. What did you think of this chaotic opening segment?
Oh man, this was nuts, right? Like, this was clicking on 1,000 different cylinders. Man, whenever Ronda lifted her up by the hair, I feel like she snatched some of her damn hair out of her head. Snatched her bald, if you will, Kenny. I think that's something that all the kids say these days. This was really a money segment. This was the best that Kurt Angle has been since he returned. Would you agree with that?
Oh yeah, 100%. Kurt Angle has found his balls. And the thing that's great about it is that they managed to bring in Survivor Series to the fray.
Yeah.
Because Kurt Angle did get fucked by Triple H Survivor Series, and now, you know, he can use that as a part of the reason he wants to fight him.
Yep. Absolutely, 110%. It makes all the sense in the world. I was all in on this, Kenny. This Ronda Rousey thing, it's clicking for me. You know? I know Hannah's aunt got quite salty with me, Kenny. Because I had
Hannah who?
Hannah Murphy.
Oh, Hannah Murphy, okay, cool.
Her poor auntie, or aunte, as I always grew up to say. Her auntie, very, very upset with me, Kenny, because I was praising Ronda Rousey. Well, get used to it, auntie, because I love me some Ronda Rousey. This was hot stuff right here, you guys.
Props to Hannah Murphy, who traveled, I think it was 10 hours, to see us in 2016. I mean, she did hug a sex pest, but we're not going to that. But she did travel a long time to come see us. So, hi, Hannah.
Absolutely. If she's going to be in New Orleans, love to see her once again. What a wonderful person. But man, oh man, this angle is so hot that you got to hold it with mittens, Kenny. With mittens. I'm enjoying it.
I would never have said this going in, and I may live to regret it, but so far, this is the hottest feud going at WrestleMania, without a question.
Oh, yeah.
It's clicking. Kurt Angle, it fits for him. I was very skeptical beforehand, but they proved me wrong. I think Stephanie and Triple H are doing their best work in years. They're really holding up their part of it. And yeah, some people had said, you know, when Ronda kind of interrupted the drum roll, that it was clunky or whatever. But I kind of like about Ronda that she's not polished. That's part of the charm for me with her.
Yeah, like, why do you want everyone else that's just going to fit into the system perfectly and sort of feel... To me, it feels more authentic that way, right?
Yeah, for sure. And then also, Kurt Angle. Say what you want about sometimes him delivering lines. See, when it got physical, I mean, the punching bit, he was a bit off, like, to get it going. But see, once it came to hooking in those ankle locks, he still can go.
Oh,
he,
no.
He knows what
he's doing. I thought he was great in this entire thing, Kenny. No. Kurt Angle, maybe the star of the program, the entirety of Monday Night Raw.
I really think that all four of them were nailed it. In particular, the thing is, you know, we've ragged on Stephanie for so many years, and quite rightly so, but this just proves that she has the ability to be an excellent heel when she wants to be.
She just needs a foil.
Yeah, she needs a foil, and... Yeah, this segment was 10 out of 10. And some people were kind of saying, you know, should Ronda have Samoan dropped her? But I was cool with it because I'm sure that by the time we get to WrestleMania, Stephanie's going to have done something or said something that's going to make you want to see Ronda get to it again. I'm interested because Ronda's going to be in every Raw up to WrestleMania. That's four more Raws. I'm curious as to how they continue this. But the first three things have you know, seemed to get better each time.
Yeah. No, for certain. I'm all about it, Kenny. I thought it was great.
So it's made official. We've got Kurt Angle and Ronda Rousey against Stephanie and Triple H at WrestleMania. Big time match. Then we go to Asuka versus Nia Jax. And Nia Jax has kind of got the control for most of the match. But then, after the break, Asuka gets the armbar in. Nia Jax tries lifting her and, you know, bashing her off the turnbuckle, trying to bash her off the ropes. But Asuka just won't give up. She will not let that hold go. And eventually Nia Jax has to tap and is defeated. And I thought this match, particularly the finish, was tremendous.
Oh, man. This was so good. Now, see, this is where I always differ from Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer, who, remember, they said that Asuka would never be a viable threat ever again, and that opportunity was out the window, and et cetera, et cetera. Plans changed, you guys, because Asuka looked dominant as all fuck all. This was great. And yes, I have been waiting to say plans changed whenever I was fucking great for like the past 3 weeks. So I'm so happy that it was such a quick turnaround that I got my one line zinger off. So that's what you get, Meltzer, for standing me and Sandra and Val up for a handshake at Wale Mania last year. It's what you get. You get the boom.
I thought Nia Jax, I thought it was really clever, like, and like the way that she was, you know, she tried everything to get out of that thing, and in the end she just couldn't go on. But the big story coming out of this was post-match, Nia Jax turned babyface, ladies and gentlemen, because they had her, you know, kind of doing the whole, you know, let's give it a clap for her performance, not the clap, a clap for the performance.
Singular,
one, not plural.
One singular clap, and it wasn't the clap.
Thank you very much. That's what I meant. And Nia Jax is just still one of my favorite performers on the roster, male or female. She clicks for me. We'll get into more stuff with her later on, but I thought they handled this really well, and no complaints from me.
This was perfect because, A, the finish was something that you wouldn't usually expect from the WWE. It felt more like a New Japan finish, actually, Kenny. That's what it reminded me of. There was actually a recent match between Tanahashi and Minoru Suzuki for the IWGP Intercontinental Championship where Tanahashi's leg got worked over for, like, the majority of the match. And there was just a point where he had some sort of leg lock held in for just minutes, literal minutes. And that's what this reminded me of. So you could see the influence there from New Japan. I really like whenever WWE does non-conventional finishes like that. And something that I thought was even better is that Nia Jax is going to get shaken up a little bit. She's going to come out brighter and better than ever because now she is no longer the non-believable monster. There I said it. She was never believable as a monster because she is a funny, good, kind-hearted person. And you can tell that whenever you see her. You want to cheer her. You don't want to boo her. And now we have the opportunity to cheer her. And she shouldn't be booed just because of her size. Her personality shines through over her size. And it emphasizes what a good, kind-hearted, good-natured person she is. Now she gets to be the number one baby face, and I can't wait for it, Kenny. It's going to be awesome.
You know, people rag a lot on Total Divas and stuff, but as soon as Nia Jax joined that show, I was very curious to see how she would fit in with the show. And she's one of the best characters on that whole show. And, you know, there's like, you know, part, I think it's like SummerSlam weekend, they did a thing where, like, you know, she's like one of the only single girls on the roster. So she was like, I want to get me some dick, you know, essentially. So they like throw a party and she's there and then she does like a runway model thing. And it's like, I love the idea that like people who are plus size have someone to look up to.
Yeah.
And,
sure.
You know, so I think she's great. I like the fact that she's kind of multidimensional. She can be a bit of a monster, but she can also have a softer side to her. I've been a Nia Jax fan since day one. I'm happy that she is continuing to get better. And yeah, it's onwards and upwards for Nia. My favorite thing, I don't know if I ever said this, but on Total Divas, there was one where she walks up to Maryse and she says, do you want to play a game? And Maryse is like, sure. And they're like backstage at Raw or something.
Sure.
And And Maurice is like, what's the game? And Naya's like, so I'll say penis, and then you try and say it louder, and we keep doing it until somebody stops. And Maurice is like, penis. And Naya's like, penis! It's so good.
So, oh, that's brilliant. So, oh, God.
Not only is she great in the ring, but she looks like she'd be an absolute laugh on a night out. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Bants. Imagine the Bants. Oh, my God.
I live for it. I really hope I get to interview her because I just want to flirt with her for like 5 minutes. So anyway, Sheamus and Cesaro, the Bar, are up next. They're taking on the Revival. This is a non-title match. Dash Wilder had sent out a tweet which was really good where he talked about everybody that they've beaten. Even the number one contenders from before, Titus Worldwide, they beat them twice. So the idea is that if the Revival can beat Sheamus and Cesaro here, they get the chance to face the Bar at WrestleMania. Pretty good match, pretty fun. The Revival get a good amount of stuff in, but in the end, Cesaro, the Bar are a good tag team unit, and Cesaro performs the neutralizer on Dawson, gets the pin, gets the 1-2-3. So the Revival are out, and the Bar are on their way to WrestleMania with no opponents. What did you make of this this program and the match?
The match was good. Just the idea that the Bar is like some undefeated team, like, oh man, they're the Asuka of the tag team division. Meanwhile, a month ago, they lost 3 times to Titus Worldwide. Clean, by the way, clean losses, not even like, you know, shenanigans or anything like that. It's just sort of goofy to me. I roll my eyes at it. So I'm very curious, more than anything, I'm curious as to who their opponents will be. It could be the Hardys. They could wrap up this Hardy compound deal, which, of course, we'll get into. They could wrap that up on free TV and not at WrestleMania. That could even be the wiser move there. But so if they do that, the Hardys are a good guess. But they did name drop that they've already beaten the Hardys. So I don't know. That leads me to believe it won't be the Hardys. So how do you feel about it? Who do you think could be the opponents here, Kenny?
First of all, I know some people are going to be raging that the Revival are not in a tag team title match at WrestleMania, but they have only been in the main roster for a year and they have had a ton of injuries and been off for about half of it. So I don't think it's cause for concern yet. And they're still on TV, they're still wrestling, but you can't feature everybody at once. And I think the Bar have done great work in the last year, and I think they deserve their spot. And actually, I know it is convoluted in the sense that they've obviously lost a fair amount, but I do like the story. They're kind of like, we've beaten everybody. Bring someone our way. It's interesting. What I heard today from PW Insider was that what they've heard is that the team that are going to take on Sheamus and Cesaro are not a team. And I don't know what that means. I mean, does that mean that when Woken Matt deletes Bray Wyatt that they become a team? I don't know what it means. But I'm curious. I don't know where you go. I mean, on Raw, I don't think the Revival were a big enough team to face them. To be honest, I don't think you can heat them up that quickly. The club don't feel that they're on that level.
See, my least favorite thing about WWE, and there are a lot of things I dislike about it, but the number one thing, and it's historically happened, like you look at just the lineage of WWE, it's always happened because Vince doesn't like tag team wrestling. What'll happen is you'll have an established tag team like the Revival or the Club, and you'll have that tag team lose to a non-tag team, which admittedly the Bar are. I consider them a tag team now. However, their roots were two singles guys that they don't know what to do with them get together and have 7 matches and then become a tag team at the end of it. That's inarguable. We can't argue that. They were singles wrestlers who were put together as a tag team. So they've been running roughshod over all of these actual tag teams. And now at WrestleMania, they're going to face 2 singles competitors that are not a tag team who are somehow better and more established than tag teams that have wrestled all over the world together as units. Makes 0 sense to me. I fucking despise that. And I always have.
I mean, I can't argue with you.
You look at Shawn Michaels and Diesel knocking off the Head Shrinkers. for crying out loud. Like, you look at the lineage of WWE, WWF, and it's plastered throughout the history. Just go back and go back, all of our wrestling historians, go back and prove me wrong. This shit happens time and time again, and it's sickening. Happened rampantly throughout the Attitude Era.
Yeah, and the Attitude Era was the worst period for it. You know, but sometimes you do get this thing where, like, Sheamus and Cesaro, I now see them as a team, and I was thinking about it when I was watching the match, actually, like, if Sheamus has to retire soon, like, it'll be a shame because I really love them together.
Yeah.
Because I know what it would mean to them apart, so I'm being open-minded about it.
This has been Sheamus's best run in the WWE.
I think, and Cesaro's, to be honest. I think the two of them have just been...
Oh, no, yeah, easily. But, I mean, Sheamus has actually won world titles. Yeah. Cesaro has not.
I think that the Woken Hardys would be my preferred option, if it was up to me. But, they're continuing... I mean, somebody tweeted me today, I can't remember who it was, sorry, but they said, you know, oh, the Bar are just going to be in the Battle Royal, and I'm like, there is no chance on earth that they are doing this storyline every week of them beating everybody and ending up in the Battle Royal.
Like, yeah, zero chance.
They're facing somebody. But so they're doing a story. I'm open to it. I'm enjoying it. We'll see where it goes. But, the thing is, I can't really, I don't know if you can think of anybody. I can't really think of two singles wrestlers on Raw who would end up together to face them. There's nobody that jumps out at me.
Bray Wyatt and Matt Hardy are the only two, yeah.
I guess we'll see. We then get John Cena coming out to talk about Fastlane. He said he's on Raw to talk to fans about SmackDown. Even Kurt Angle understands the importance of Fastlane. He's here because he knows if he does it on SmackDown, he'll get interrupted by everybody in the match. He's doing it because it's his only road to WrestleMania. He was given a chance. He earned it by beating AJ Styles. He will never be somebody to enter the ring and hold someone back post Nexus. And I added those last two words, but you know, Cena said when he wins on Sunday, the critics will come from everywhere and say that he robbed AJ Styles of the WrestleMania moment, but he encourages AJ to use his rematch clause right away to make the WWE Championship match at WrestleMania a triple threat with Cena, AJ, and Nakamura. Before we get to the bizarre interruption, I feel like your penis retreated into your body when he even made the illusion that there would be a triple threat match at WrestleMania. What were your thoughts when John Cena wanted to crush your soul?
Me and Val, it's a real bad mess right now in the living room because whenever that happened, we squatted and shit into our hands and started throwing the shit at the television like monkeys. So, yeah, we sort of became primordial primates,
What an image!
Yeah, and I didn't bother to clean it up. So there's fecal matter all over my living room right now, Kenny. And you can thank John Cena for that, because he is also a pile of shit.
To give you more of an unbiased opinion...
I just spent $900 on fucking plane tickets, and I didn't spend $900 on plane tickets, Kenny, to watch fucking John Cena interrupt my Wrestle Kingdom rematch.
I think what's so good about this is exactly the reaction that you're having.
But because... I don't even want to watch the fucking pay-per-view to find out, Kenny.
But that's you. You're extreme. But before John Cena was in this match, right, nobody wants to watch that fucking five-way. Are you serious? Baron Corbin, Dolph Ziggler. Ugh.
Hold on a second. Let me get Dolph in here. Dolph's here, by the way. I don't know if I told you or not. He asked to come on Raw, and they were like, "No, you're not a big enough star to be on Raw anymore." So he was all like, "Well, can I at least come on the Raw rundown?" And I was all like, "I guess." So hold on one second. Hey, Dolph, you want to come in here? Kenny McIntosh, is that you?
Yes, Dolph, it is. How are you, you pathetic piece of shit?
This is Dolph Ziggler, your Slammy Award winner. And I just wanted to say that if I talk loud enough, and if I raise the sound of my voice loud enough, then people will know that I mean business. And so I've got to start screaming at the top of my lungs to show that I have the most emotion available out of everybody on the roster. And eventually they'll give me a main event again. And All right, Dolph, get the fuck out of here. You're scaring all the kids away. Come on. Jesus fucking Christ. God damn it. Hold on one second. Hold on. I gotta fucking... Ah! God damn it, Dolph. Get the fuck out of here. I already told you to stop it.
You know that way sometimes, ladies and gentlemen, when you are in a moment of passion... And you figure out that in this moment of passion that you're about to...
I left the fucking window open and he climbed in.
So if you're in a moment of passion with somebody and somehow you find that you're going to come too soon, think of that voice and I guarantee you will be a marathon runner of sex.
Yeah, that fucking guy, man.
Fuck Dolph Ziggler.
I had a fucking pie baking in the window, and he's just
Who
always
the fuck
trying
are you, little Red Riding Hood? Pie baking in the window.
I do romantic things for my wife, thank you, and she likes baked goods, so there. So I had the pie in the window, and as per usual, he's thirsty as fuck for anything, attention, pussy, pies, apparently. And so he waltzed in and...
Attention, pussy, and pie. That's your three go-tos.
and so, yeah. I'm sorry he barged in like that, you guys. That was very unprofessional of him. But what more could we expect from Dolph Ziggler?
Well, my point was going to be is that what is so good about this is that Cena being in the match... adds a level of intrigue and dread that people are worried. And I think it's a good thing for the match. It makes me want to watch the match more. Now, if we get to next week...
I have a bad heart, Kenny. I can't tolerate that shit.
What it reminds me of is Cena on Sunday is going to remind me of watching like an Undertaker streak match. When like you have palpitations when you might get beat.
The streak is me being alive, Kenny, and I would like to fucking keep the streak going for another year, thank you. Jesus, fuck.
I do think that Adam Cena is a good thing, and I think that when we get, you know, down to WrestleMania, I'll tell you one thing, though, Cena aside, someone who needs a resuscitation is AJ Styles, because he feels colder than ice right now.
Yeah, yeah.
So
the terrible writing, the hokey jokes...
Well, yeah, he's being programmed as the secondary guy behind, you know, Owens and Zayn and now Cena. And but the other problem is that I don't think that Nakamura and AJ are particularly guys that you can tell a weekly television story with. They're guys that you just need to put in the ring and let them fight. So
yeah.
I hope that they can do something between Fastlane and Wrestle. I mean, I just want Fastlane out the way. I've not been so dreading a pay-per-view in a long time.
Yeah, and the sooner you get it out of the way, the clearer the picture becomes for WrestleMania, and we're all ready for WrestleMania.
I mean, Raw's pretty much on the road to it, so...
yeah.
So then Cena gets interrupted by Goldust, who comes out and quotes on the waterfront from 1954, calls himself a bum, says that his dream's going to start by stopping John Cena on his road to WrestleMania. I don't know how he's going to do that, but he's not in the Fastlane match. But anyway, he ends up sucker-punching Cena... And that leads to a match with John Cena and Goldust. Apparently a first time ever match. And Cena beats Goldust. And why?
First time they've ever wrestled?
I've not wrestled Earthquake. Doesn't mean you want to see it.
you know, for all of our younger listeners out there, there's a great Earthquake story. And I'm sure you know it, Kenny, but I think it's worth telling. So... John Tenta had this tattoo on his arm, right? And it was like his alma mater, and it was like a tiger's face. You remember this, Kenny, back in the day?
I do remember, yep.
Yeah, and he had this tattoo, And so it was just like this, the head of this tiger, he goes to WCW and they go, oh, you're going to be the shark. And he's all like, oh, all right, fine. And they go, but you know, the shark wouldn't have a tattoo of a tiger on his arm. And he's like, okay. And they go, you should get that tattoo covered up and have a shark on it instead. They actually made him go and get a tattoo over his tattoo to transform the tiger into a shark. And it looked like a premature shark, if that. It was the most misshapen shark that you would ever see. It looked like a big blob with a fin on it. And the poor guy, in like 2 weeks after that, they go, oh yeah, we're changing your gimmick. You're no longer the shark.
Then he was Avalanche. And then they asked him to get an Avalanche tattoo, and he said, fuck you.
So the moral of the story is, guys, is if you have tattoos and your employer tells you to do something about it, you give them the old Austin-style double birds and walk out.
I do love the idea that, like, so I'm not going to say what it is because we're not there yet on Retro Rob, but Earthquake was getting tryouts around this time in 1998 as Earthquake.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they wanted to bring him back, and they wanted to repackage him as a main event heel. And that is not what they do, everybody.
No.
We will get to it. Kurt Angle's on the phone backstage. He's interrupted by Elias. Elias says that he should cancel the Symphony of Destruction match with Braun Strowman. There would be musical instruments all over, but music should bring people together, not tear them apart. Angle says he's not cancelling the match, and it's going to be Falls Count Anywhere, so we'll get to that. We get a video highlighting Hillbilly Jim getting into the WWE Hall of Fame, and this is when I'm going to sound like the biggest hypocrite in the world. If you look at it objectively, Hillbilly Jim has no business being anywhere near the WWE Hall of Fame, but when I watch this video, he makes me smile. He is bonkers. Hulk Hogan trained him. He couldn't do anything. You know, there's a great bit where he's trying to do like a kind of, he's got a fucking workout and I don't even know the names of the machines, but it's the thing where you, like, you put your arms out to each side and like hold on and kind of do like, you know, cable flies or something.
Oh,
and, like,
yeah, that's the whirly dervish.
Yeah, and Hogan's trying to get him to do it and he can't do it. And then, you know, but he was a big deal. He was in the Rock and Wrestling cartoon. He had, you know, Don't Go Messing with the Country Boy. It was a big song in the 80s in wrestling. And he got a knee injury not too long into his career. I mean, he's never had a good match in his life, and he is responsible for Phineas Godwin, but there is something about him that makes me smile. So I am happy to see Hillbilly Jim going in just because he's a nice guy and he was fun on Legends House, and I don't know why, but it makes me happy.
Kenny, controversial take. I loved Legends House. Legends House was my shit. I love that shit. I eat that shit up. And he was the most likable person on Legends House. So just by that alone, put him in the Hall of Fame. I don't give a fuck. It's not my Hall of Fame.
He also, remember when he came back at WrestleMania 17 and looked exactly the same?
Yeah. And that dude, he's impressive size-wise, right? Like, he's got the, he's jacked and he's very tall. So, yeah, no, I'm perfectly fine with it, man. He's a character from my childhood. The first action figure I ever owned was a LJN Hillbilly Jim toy. And so, due to that, he will always have a place in my heart.
And he's going to close out this week's episode with Don't Go Messing with the Country Boy, because any excuse for me to play that song is fine by me. Especially since the network fucking dubs it all the time. You know, it's their song. Whatever.
Yeah, makes no sense.
Bayley comes out next. She's going to talk to Charlie Caruso. Charlie Caruso asked about the issues with Sasha. Was Bayley sending a message to end a friendship last week? And Bayley said, well, you know, it was every woman for herself at the Royal Rumble and Elimination Chamber. Before she could say anything else, Absolution's music hits. Paige mocks Bayley. And then we get Bayley versus Mandy Rose. Not a bad match, actually, for how new Mandy Rose is. And in the end, Bayley wins with an inside cradle. She's jumped by Absolution, but Sasha runs out for the save. And then Sasha Banks raises Bayley's arm, goes for a hug, but Bayley blocks it and leaves the ring. So continued tension there with Bayley and Sasha. Any thoughts?
This was, I'm just hoping this is actually building towards an angle at WrestleMania. That's like my main concern, I think.
They need to pull the trigger soon on something.
Yeah. Get the ball rolling with it. But I mean, it's going par for the course, I guess. It just needs to speed up slightly, I think.
Do you know, there was a vibe here. I don't know who's going heel in this program.
It's going to be Sasha.
Do you know, I wouldn't mind either of them going heel. It wouldn't bother me either way. I think there's money in both, so we'll see. And then, you know, if Bayley goes heel, you can always have Sasha go to SmackDown and then go heel. There's options.
I think the problem with Bayley turning heel is that Sasha is such a good heel, and we don't know what we have with Bayley as a heel. So,
I mean,
I'm just more inclined to see Sasha.
They couldn't be heel in the same show.
Yeah, for sure.
WWE are doing Women's History Month, and they had a video for Eunice Kennedy Shriver, who I wasn't really aware of, but she's the sister of JFK, and she's the woman who came up with the Special Olympics, so I thought it was a really cool video, and she deserves to be highlighted. So
Good times.
Backstage, Nia Jax is kind of holding ice on her bad arm, and Alexa and Mickie James come in. I'm going to get the negative out of the way right now. Why have we not been explained why Mickie James is with Alexa Bliss? I need that explained to me. Anyway, Alexa tells Mickie James she's got this, and she says to Nia, you know, you lost at Elimination Chamber, you lost again on Raw, you're not going to WrestleMania. I know that you must be disappointed in yourself, but I've never saw you give up like this. You know, you must be embarrassed. And Alexa said that Nia has friends, and, you know, she wants to pick herself up, and she'll be on the WrestleMania card next year. She talks about Jax being bullied and scorned because she was bigger than the other kids. Nia Jax starts to cry, and Alexa Bliss says that she sees the way people look at her in airports, and, you know, Nia can't quit, or everyone's going to lose all respect for her. And if you had shown me this in paper, I'd have been like, what the fuck? But this was excellent, I thought. And Nia Jax played this so well. I'm all in for Nia versus Alexa. Bring it on.
Big time tears coming from Nia Jax. It felt authentic. Alexa Bliss, as always, the best on the stick. This was money, Kenny. Just print it. Print it. I want to see Nia destroy her.
I'm all in. I'm all in on this. It's really good. Nia Jax is so layered as a performer. And because there's a lot of people that could have done this and it would have failed. But it didn't with her. And, you know, look at Nia's track record. You know, the stuff with Enzo was really good before they, you know, obviously couldn't go on with it. But Nia Jax is a good character. So, and I think that I think her being the babyface is the right way around for the character. So,
absolutely.
And then I think Mickie James being with Alexa will actually be a cool part of the match. So, Braun Strowman does a promo where they have those awful graphics on the screen that just I don't like. His promo was fine, but it's the graphics.
The graphics distract me every time I see him. They hired some 18-year-old kid who had like three classes at a video editing workshop.
But
look what I learned over my holiday weekend.
The thing I don't like about it is that, like, whenever I see it, it takes me out of Braun Strowman.
Yeah, it distracts you.
Because Braun Strowman is not the sort of guy that's going to film a promo and go, put words on the screen. Like, he's just not. So
no, not at all.
So yeah. Up next, Elias is on stage. He's playing piano. He's playing the drums. He's playing the guitar. He's just the greatest. Then he's getting towards the ring and he wants JoJo to introduce him. The lights go out. The spotlight shines on the stool. He's not there. They cut to Elias running out of the arena. Elias gets to his car. He starts trying to drive his car, but the engine's just revving. Nothing's happening. And then they pull back. And Braun Strowman has lifted the back of his car so that Elias cannot drive away. Elias runs back into the building. Strowman puts the car down and just bolts after Elias. Elias tries hitting Strowman with a guitar in a top rope elbow at one point. Elias tries covering him. He kicks out at one. They end up on the stage where Strowman wants to put him through the broadcast table, but it doesn't work. And then he ends up smashing the giant bass over his back, puts him under the piano. Then he, in one of my favorite moments of all time, sits at the piano and just like goes doo, 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 on the piano. And he then picks the piano up and slams it down on Elias, tosses the piano aside, covers Elias for the win, and then screams, "I told you I'd get you!" And he remains my favorite wrestler. This was fucking great.
So good. So good. But, you know, I will say to anyone who is listening from WWE, I know you listen now. You can send the residual checks in care to Valerie Meerschaert in St. Louis, Missouri, for, you know, just go ahead and taking her idea from last week. You missed the Looney Tunes teeth, though. That was the best part.
Well, they can't rip off all of her ideas because then they need to pay residuals to her. They can claim that they didn't know about it this week.
I'm just saying, I know you guys listen now. Prove it. Yeah.
But if they listen, we would not be getting the guests that we do. If Shawn Michaels listened to Retro Raw, don't have that tour would happen, to be fair. Bray Wyatt versus Rhino next. He beats him in like 45 seconds. Wyatt takes the mic, calls it Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy pops up on the screen. He agrees with Bray Wyatt the Great War is not over, but the only battlefield worthy of their cosmic combat is the Hardy Compound. Footage airs of Matt Hardy at the compound, which was filmed by Rebby Hardy last week. It is not Impact footage, for those who are wondering. Hardy says that the battlefield has been prepared for annihilation, and Bray Wyatt should prepare himself for the ultimate deletion. So they are going there. What are your thoughts, David?
Oh, I can't wait. I'm excited. Senior Benjamin just posted a small video on Twitter of him holding a shovel that says delete on it, with him just smiling maniacally into the camera. I am all about this. Vanguard 1 was in the video package, Kenny. I'm just
first appearance of Vanguard 1 in WWE television. Welcome.
I'm just hoping, Kenny, that my favorite character in all of the Broken Universe makes an appearance. And that would be, of course, Skarsgård, the dilapidated boat.
Here's my dream, right? And I don't know how you can do it just follically. If Bray Wyatt goes into the Lake of Reincarnation and comes out as Husky Harris, I will never stop laughing. Like somebody else had said, can you imagine if Ricky Morton is still on the crane from Apocalypto? The question that everyone is asking, and it's a valid question, I think, is have they missed the boat on this? And I think the answer is all going to be in how this plays out. They can save the whole thing if they let this be all about the Hardys and how they do stuff. If this is because, you know, the fair point a lot of people have made is when Impact did the Final Deletion and Apocalypto and all that kind of stuff, it was the main thing on the show. Yeah. In fact, it was the only thing that people wanted to watch. Whereas, you know, this is not the main thing that people want to see. So I think the only chance for it to survive is for Matt to have his sort of handprints all over it. What do you think, if you had to give a percentage, I dread to ever say these words, but a Voice of Wrestling percentage on how successful you think the Ultimate Deletion is going to be, what percentage of success ratio would you give it?
Hold on, let me glare into the crystal ball. Oh, god damn it, Dolph Ziggler stole the crystal ball while he was in here. I was too busy trying to push him out, and I didn't notice where his hands were reaching.
He stole your pie, he stole your pussy, he stole your... Fuck's sake.
Yeah, well, no, the cat's still here. I will say, though, let me see if I can find something else that I can gaze into and sort of gaze into and make a prediction. All right, it's half-channeled, it's a little bit cloudy, but I'm thinking an official Voice of Wrestling prediction that the upcoming Ultimate Deletion will be a 70% success, Kenny. I'm feeling optimistic about this.
Wow, 70%. I'm cautiously optimistic. I mean, I think this, it had to go here. It had to get to the Hardy compound. Do you think it happens at WrestleMania, or does it happen on a Raw before WrestleMania?
It will not happen at WrestleMania. I do not see that happening. I think it'll take place on a Raw before WrestleMania, and we will have some sort of payoff to the whole angle at WrestleMania.
I feel like if you're going to go to the Hardy compound, that's pretty much where Brother Nero should appear.
Yeah, exactly. They want Brother Nero for that WrestleMania buy rate, Kenny.
they do. Yeah, it's pretty exciting. When he said, you know, the Hardy compound, the Ultimate Deletion, I got goosebumps, legit goosebumps. So it's almost like you've sat someone down the audience are really hungry and you've sat them down. Are you going to give them a steak or are you going to give them Brussels sprouts? Because Andy, who likes Brussels sprouts, is mental.
It is very true.
Wade Keller was in his Twitter going like, I just got a 91-year-old woman who can't taste or smell to eat Brussels sprouts. I'm like, she's getting off problems, fucker. Up next, it's time for the third annual Mizzy Awards with the Miz, Bo Dallas, and Curtis Axel. Miz made a lot of Oscar jokes, I said on social media, for whatever reason. I think when most people make these kind of pop culture references, they don't work, but they do work when it's the Miz for some reason. He just feels more in the pulse of what's going on. He then gives the nominees for Superstar, who is best at patting himself on the back. Seth Rollins for bragging about the performance in the Gauntlet match that he lost. Kurt Angle for being a good father to Jason Jordan. And Finn Balor for bragging about being the first ever Universal Champion for one day when he never won it back. Then he did another one for, you know, worst decision by a Raw GM, which was Kurt Angle for bringing Jason Jordan to Raw, Kurt Angle for adding Rollins to the Elimination Chamber, and Kurt Angle for not having a match for The Miz at WrestleMania. And a shocking twist, Kurt Angle won.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's now a Mizzy Award winner. Can add that to his Olympic resume.
By the way, whenever they nominated Kurt Angle for being a good dad, and then it was just a compilation of him yelling at Jason Jordan, I laughed so hard.
Yeah. Miz said that Kurt Angle couldn't accept the award because he was too busy sucking up to Ronda Rousey. But having the Mizzy in his resume would be helpful when he's out of a job after WrestleMania. And then the Miz is about to give himself a Lifetime Achievement Award when Seth Rollins comes out. Then Finn Balor comes out. We end up getting Balor and Rollins against the Miztourage. They get the win in about 11 minutes when Rollins hits the blackout on Miz and gets the pin. After the match, Kurt Angle comes out and books the triple threat for WrestleMania with The Miz, Seth Rollins, and Finn Balor. This was good stuff. I thought The Miz's was fun. It made me laugh. And I thought, to be honest, The Miz's were more entertaining than the match.
Yeah, by far. I understand The Miz's thing isn't for everybody, but I really enjoyed it. It made me legitimately laugh out loud twice. And like I said, the whole Kurt Angle being a good dad to Jason Jordan, and it's just, you idiot! And it's just him yelling at him. Oh, my God! So I'm like,
so good.
Nearly laughing just thinking about it. So, yeah, no, really, really, really funny stuff. Yeah, and to be fair, that's going to be a hell of a match. That's a dark horse match to steal the show at Mania.
Yeah, it's because you've got two guys in there who are, you know, world-class performers, and then you've got Miz, who is not as good as them in the ring, but he's a great character. So
yeah,
there's a lot you can do there. So main event time, Paul Heyman comes out. He's got the Universal Championship with him. I know some people, including Ollie and other people, were saying, you know, but he's got a replica belt. It's not got Brock Lesnar's side plates on it. I did not look that closely, but I take your word for it. It doesn't really bother me. But
yeah.
Whatever gets you through the night. He said that he's not looking for meaningless affirmation from the fans who were trying to cheat him. He's there to deliver a message from Brock Lesnar. He put the belt down. He said that once Lesnar successfully defends his title at WrestleMania, and then if he chooses to defend the title at SummerSlam, he'll come down to the ring and lay down that title and the UFC championship next to it. gives Reigns props for being one of only two men to defeat Undertaker at WrestleMania. Asked if anyone pointed out the Undertaker wrestled only one time a year, and he said no one made that statement because if they did, it would be bullshit. He said Undertaker is Undertaker 365 days a year. Reigns beat Taker, so props to him. Lesnar's Lesnar 365 days a year. Reigns isn't going to beat him. And then he, in one of my favorite, I thought this was fucking great. Heyman says this. He brings up the title and says, "This is Brock Lesnar's bitch. She belongs to Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns. You are eyeballing Brock Lesnar's bitch, and you can't have her." Oh, what a guy. He then talks about Reigns' bloodline, says, you know, this isn't a belt, it's not a strap, it's not a prop. This is the declarative statement that you're the number one or better than everyone in the universe. And then he, you know, saying that, says, you know, you have to make all these sacrifices. That if you get a phone call, something's happened to your father, you can't go home because the title needs to be defended the next night at WrestleMania. And if Reigns wants to be the Universal Champion, then he needs to know that. He needs to lust for it more. Lesnar will be in Detroit next week for Raw. And then one of my favourite lines is he said, after WrestleMania, if you seek her another title match, and basically uses the Wild Samoans against him. Oh, God. Reigns comes out, though. He gets in Lesnar, Heyman's face. Says, you know, Brock really is a bitch, isn't he? You know, he's not here tonight. He merely thought that Brock Lesnar would show up for work and actually want to be there. And he told Heyman that if Lesnar's going to be there next week, don't come dressed for a promo segment, come dressed for a fight. And Heyman leaves as Reigns' music plays. I know that some people have kind of said that maybe they didn't think this was as strong. I thought this was tremendous. I thought Paul Heyman, this was one of my favourite Paul Heyman promos in a long time. I thought he was great here. And I'm looking forward to the face-to-face next week. So it worked for me.
Paul's great. I love hearing Paul talk. Paul's going to be one of those guys that whenever he eventually hangs it up or just gets bored or what have you and just disappears from TV for a while, there's going to be a huge void whenever Paul Heyman isn't on the television show regularly. And that's something you can say unequivocally. And same, and it's certainly apparent here. A lot of people talk about how, you know, oh, it's very formulaic. I know Billy Beck tweeted this, and I thought it was a great tweet, too, because I'm not the biggest Brock Lesnar fan on the planet, that this is very formulaic. The challenger comes out, cuts a promo. The week after that, Paul Heyman comes out and cuts a promo. The week after that, they have a pull apart. And then soon after that, there's a disappointing match. And then you repeat it all at the next big, one of the big four pay-per-views. And to be fair, that is true. However, it does give us the opportunity to hear Paul Heyman speak. And I'm never against that. I like the blatant disrespect, I should say, towards the title here. I thought that that was, really good. He sort of laid the groundwork of how it should be respected. And then, he took the respect out of it and, displayed it as a object or an animal in which someone takes ownership of. I enjoyed that aspect of it. I thought that was cool. But the problem ultimately lies is next week we're going to get the pull apart, and I don't think it's going to really matter at all to me, like whatsoever. I will not care. So yeah, man, kind of treading water, unfortunately, but man, oh man, Heyman's great. So this didn't click on all cylinders for me, but everything Heyman said was just, electric.
I think the one thing I would have changed from this show, I really enjoyed Raw, but I would have put Braun and Elias last. That would have been my go-to, because I think when you've got Roman coming out to Heyman, you can't really do anything, so you're kind of, there's not really much you can do at the end, so I would have swapped those two around and put Roman and Heyman at the top of the third hour.
So what you're saying is Val books main event wrestling really well.
Sure, if that's what gets you through the night, then yes.
I'll let her know that you said that. That way she won't have to murder you in New Orleans.
I will hit Val back, just to clarify. You need...
You wouldn't survive! You could hit her back. It would be like whenever Stephanie McMahon hit Ronda Rousey from behind. It was like, oh, bitch, you done fucked up.
So overall, surmise Raw for me this week, and then give me your rating out of 10.
This Raw was, kind of fun and kind of breezy, I thought. It had some, good moments. Nothing too standout-ish, I would say. The Missy's thing made me laugh. I'm sorry, you guys. I did enjoy it. And the opening segment was electric, though. I enjoyed it. I think I would go with a solid 7.5 out of 10 on this one, Kenny. Maybe even push it up to 8, but I'm a pessimist. Let's keep it a 7.5 because I had to pay extra for plane tickets and I'm not happy this week.
I'm going to give this show... I thought it was a really good episode. Not as good as last week, but still felt short and breezy. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. I think that the only thing that brings it down is I would have swapped the main event over with Braun and Elias. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of the main thing. So I think Raw's really knocking out of the park on the way to WrestleMania. SmackDown is limping along like a dying dog. But, you know, Fastlane's this Sunday. Once that's done, hopefully we'll get some good stuff. I did ask people on Twitter if you've got any questions. I'm going to do very quick fire with you, David, for exactly 5 minutes to see how many we get through.
Sure, so let's do it.
I'll ask the question, I'll go to you, I'll go to me, we'll do the next one.
Yeah, let's do it.
Sydney, whose surname I can't pronounce, wants to know, opinion on Ronda Rousey being in every episode of Raw up to Mania, good or bad?
Good, leading up to Mania. After that, maybe scale it back a bit.
Yeah, cautiously good. Oscar wants to know, Samoan drop from Ronda or botched angle slam?
Samoan drop. It looked like a Samoan drop. I didn't think anything. It looked brutal because she's green, but no, just a Samoan drop.
Yeah, I like the Samoan drop. Tony wants to know, how much did you cringe when Ronda said you before the drum roll even started? I didn't cringe. I thought it was good. I thought the fact that she interrupted Stephanie and her bullshit sort of like, yay, worked for me. So I enjoyed it.
Yeah, she wasn't playing games because she's not there to play games. She's there to kick people's asses.
Samantha wants to know, where did they go with Braun for WrestleMania? I'm going to be optimistic and say main event. He's going to find a way to get in there because there's nowhere else for him to be.
Yeah, once they realize how dead in the water this feud is between Roman and Brock, then they're going to have to inject some life into it, and that life is Braun Strowman.
Francisco wants to know, Bayley is going to be the face in this feud with Sasha, right? I feel like it could go either way at this point, but it makes more sense with Sasha being the heel.
Yes.
Don't use up all your words at once. Di wants to know, what do you think of the... No, we've talked about the Cruiserweight tag title, Di. Andrew wants to know, will Nia Jax go over as a babyface? Yes.
Yeah! Oh, yeah, big time. Big time. Love it.
ND13 wants to know, I don't know if this is to you or me, did you ever want to be a wrestler?
Never, but I did want to be a referee and or a manager. Could you tell by my gift of gab, Kenny?
I can. I've got a very low threshold of pain, so no, but I would have entertained the idea of being a manager in hell. Callum, not to be confused with Calum, Callum wants to know, what matches do you think will be in the pre-show at WrestleMania?
Oh, boy. Bobby Roode's match, whatever that is. Bobby Roode, Randy Orton. I could see that on the pre-show.
Yeah, I could see that too. Who we got next? I know Calum had another question, but I'll be honest, it's so far back in the timeline, I probably can't get to it. Sorry. Frankie wants to know, do you think the Ronda storyline is bringing out the best in Stephanie's heel character? I feel as if they haven't been this invested in her bitchiness for a very long time.
Hold the phone here. Calum, okay, he even changed his thing here. I love Calum Hogan so much, Kenny, that I went down and I found that question of his, okay? You're so rude. Why you gotta hurt my feelings just all the time? So mean. He says, do you think Miz or Elias should change brands? Because I love Elias and think he should have a mid-card belt, but he will be overshadowed by The Miz. So him or Miz on SmackDown would work. And I'll be honest, Calum, I agree wholeheartedly. I would put The Miz on SmackDown and have him in the main event title picture.
Yeah, I think that I think one of them going to a different brand would be good. For sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, feel free to continue with your questions.
Okay. Thank you for your permission. Ibby wants to know, what's your favorite Pringles flavor? Mine's is Texas barbecue.
I can't eat Pringles anymore, so fuck you.
Alan Proven. Oh,
also, though, I did not answer the Stephanie McMahon question. Could you please read that one again?
Do you think the Ronda storyline is bringing out the best in Stephanie's heel character? Frankie says, I feel as if I haven't been this invested in her bitchiness for a very long time.
Yes, because there is the stake of someone getting the comeuppance on her.
Up next, we have Dre wants to know, favorite book, wrestling or otherwise.
Really hard to top Stephen King, maybe The Shining, but I don't know. What about you?
Wrestling-wise, I'm probably going to have to go with Bret Hart, even though he is more egomaniacal in his book than anybody else. I'd go with Bret for the wrestling one. For non-wrestling, like Stephen King, that's kind of my direction.
Another one too, The Stranger by Albert Camus, really good stuff. The Bret Hart one, The Death of WCW by Brian Alvarez.
Oh, that's really a great book. Even when he plugs it in situations that don't warrant it, but yeah.
But still. Yeah.
Alan Proven, will I be killed if I don't stand during the national anthem? No. Stephen,
you'll be killed if you kneel.
Oh, yeah. I'm so tempted to kneel. Anyway, Stephen Tubatelli wants to know, being as the bar of technically issued open challenge at WrestleMania, sanity or authors of pain, who takes it up, or will it be someone entirely different? I don't think they do a call-up before WrestleMania, personally.
I would love to see a call-up before WrestleMania, but we'll see.
Jushin Thunder Liger, maybe not the real one, who needs to win more at Mania, Rollins or Balor?
Rollins.
Aiden Ritchie wants to know, do you think they give too much away in the opening segment? I feel that they should have saved Rousey getting her hands on Stephanie to WrestleMania. Before the segment, I would have said yes, but I think it was great. I think it was just what they needed to do to inject some fire into it.
Yeah, I wouldn't have had them touch, but since they did, I don't think that it did irreparable damage.
Cammy Hutton wants to know, favorite TV show at the moment?
Black Mirror.
Interesting. Favorite TV show. Some recent ones that I've liked. I loved Ozark on Netflix.
Ah, yeah, it takes place in Missouri. You know mm-hmm. that.
I liked Stranger Things season 2. I just watched The Crown because my mum told me to watch it. It's actually really interesting. Claire Foy, who plays the Queen, is really good. Whether you like the moniker or not, it's interesting. Ben McMullen, who wins the title off Roman after WrestleMania? I couldn't really say because there's going to be a shake-up, so I don't know who's going to be in what brand.
I would love to see Samoa Joe win it off of Roman.
Elliot Coombe, if Brock Lesnar moves on to UFC, who, if anyone, what involvement do you see Paul Heyman having in WWE? Manager, general manager, or writer? I don't think he has any interest in getting back into the Vince McMahon writer relationship, but I think it would take someone special for him to stay around as a manager, aka Ronda.
Yeah, I don't see him just shilling out for any old talent, as it were. But if Ronda's going to stay a babyface, you know, it's going to depend on how the crowd reacts to her once she gets in there against people that the fans like, you know, like a Becky Lynch. You know, what's the crowd going to do whenever she's in there with Alexa Bliss, you know? So if they have to turn her heel, Paul Heyman all the way.
So from there, we have Notorious Hero. Should Roman stay in WWE and hope to go over the crowd, or should he leave WWE? I'm going to stop there.
We don't read shit questions on this program.
Gregory Scott Kirby, what instruments that weren't in the Symphony of Destruction should have been in there? The triangle, because Braun Strowman should have played it badly over Elias after he beat him.
That would have been really good. I think it was missing, Kenny?
What's that?
An extraordinary xylophone!
For God's sake. So there you go. That's all of our questions we've got so far. We had some other ones, but I've just tried to read out the ones that are going to be good for the listeners. That's it for this week. David, any final thoughts before we go?
You know, life can come at you very hard. You should do whatever you can to make yourself happy while you're able to. And you know what that includes for me, Kenny? That includes going to New Orleans, a city I've never been to, and seeing new sights and tasting new flavors and smelling new smells and being around you, the people I love, such as you and Sandra. I love you guys so much. Ollie, it's going to be wonderful. The good brother Kyle's going to be down there. Mike Mears is going to be there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Never met Mike. Can't wait. Really excited for it. Fiona, it's going to be wonderful. And I can't wait to see my good friends and have good times. You can't put a price tag on the life experiences in which you will remember all the way to your dying days. So live freely and live happily.
And then there's also the experience where David says to Val, so New York next year? anyway, thank you very much, everybody, for listening. We've gone a little bit longer here because people have said they liked when we went longer last week, so we might just go a little bit longer leading up to WrestleMania because, you know, we're that kind of people. Thanks for listening. We hope you've enjoyed it. And here to play us out is the one and only Hillbilly Jim, the new WWE Hall of Famer, with Don't Go Missing for the Country Boy. We'll see you next week.
Take care, everybody, and don't let Dolph Ziggler eat your pie.
Or your pussy. Don't go messing with a country boy, a country boy, a country boy. Don't go messing with a country boy, don't mess with a country boy. When I was a little bitty boy, baby, I cut my teeth on a big old tree. Mama filled my bottle from a moonshine still. My first meal was a bass she killed. A bass she killed, a bass she killed. My first meal was a bass she killed. Well, I grew, and by the time I was 10, I was 6 feet tall and a man among men. Now I love my work and I love my play. I hate the fool that gets my way. Get my way, get my way. I hate the fool that gets my way. Don't go messing with a country boy, a country boy, a country boy. Don't go messing with a country boy. Don't mess with a country boy.